This is episode number 115 of Library of the Living Dead, presenting Library of Horror. You are welcome here. Good librarian to episode number 115 of Library of the Living Dead, presenting Library of Horror. What you just got was our song by T-Virus called Horror Night. Coming right up is a story by David Dunwoody that is just freaking incredibly weird. It's called Peeling Ernie. And then we get Twisted Sister, Horrortaria, Captain Howdy. And then a story by John McQuaig called The Swarm. You get a song, The Horror, by RJD2. And then we get Corey's Eerie Examinations, and it's about the abominable Dr. Fibes. You get The Horror Song by Captain Cutthroat, and that's for all you pirates that took over the forum during Horror Realm. We get a story by Lee Hartnup, who's known as Goat Boy. It's called Doctor Patient Confidentiality. And then we'll have an out song called Don't Fall Asleep by Swallow the Sun. I hope you enjoy the show. And just to let you know, hey ho, let's go! Peelin' Ernie by David Dunwoody. I headed out of Reno one night, hauling a rig loaded up with a bunch of those Stonehenge rocks, due east. Gotta get these bastards to Jersey by next week so they can be freighted off to wherever the hell the elders do their business. I don't mess with the upper class, you understand. The top tier fellows that run the tribes, I'm a bag man essentially. Sometimes a gunman or a shaman, but you ain't heard that from me. This boy is freelance. That's how I like to live life. They talk about great Mother Earth and trees rooted to the soil, and I like to think of myself as a leaf blown along in the breeze. So I'm hauling these stones, and lo and behold, of course, you can set your watch by those Reno hitchhikers dotting the desert like bugs. This guy's name's Ernie. Ernie climbs into the rig and slaps my back like we're old friends. "Where you headed, journeyman?" he says. He smiles like he's putting down broken glass up for sale. And I just try not to catch a scent of his rotten breath. Breath like that comes from the dry, dead pit down in you. In your bowels. And it's the stench of hell. "Well, I'm headed east," is all I'm going to give up. and he takes it. And we ride along for a while, jawing about the usual shit. You always got to jaw about the usual shit before you get to the meat. To the reason for a meeting. Sports, shoes, clouds, dogs, what the fuck ever. The sun's long gone and we're cruising through the molasses on a smooth stretch of desert road. I got this thing about my skin. It ain't no good, Ernie says with a slack jaw grin. He starts to peeling off his face. Well, gee damn, if I haven't seen it all. But he's getting his guts all over my leather seats, and he opens up his plaid shirt, and he starts tearing at his tits, yelling, I'm coming apart! I'm coming apart! It's my judgment day! Ernie beats his head against the window, and I go for the python holstered beside my seat. 357 Colt Magnum, snug in her pocket, ready to belch hell if need be to get this disease-peeling prick out of my cab before he stains the whole thing up for a year. Son, I say, you got yourself one of two choices. Get your ass out of my truck now, or I'll do it for you. God bless your melting meat, but you got to get off my leather seat. Ernie's all crying and saying how he molested all these kids, how he's going to go to hell, and how he's dead inside and hiding it for years, and all the while pieces of him like lard are slithering down my custom-made seats. And well, I'll sit back and take a good story, but fuck yes. So I shot him clean through the head and sent him out onto the road, sputtering curses and gouts of blood and rolling into the tumbleweeds. That's Ernie. And I pulled into Carson City at sunup, hosed the cab down best I could. Goddamn leather seats are ruined.
Oh, You're making me nervous, Jake scowled at Debbie. Her hand was shaking around wildly. The light from the torch she held flew all over the engine bay. Looking up, he saw her eyes darting all around, peering deep into the darkness, searching for them. Come on, keep it steady, girl. I just need to connect the new battery and we'll be off. He tried his best to reassure her, but it was a waste of time. Far too many times before, she'd seen what happened when someone was caught by the swarm. Their own car had given up about a mile away. The damn engine had blown. He knew when they found another, his own battery would be flat. He removed the one from theirs and carted it along to the road until they finally came across this old and battered van. This wasted time had brought the night down, and they both knew the swarm would be too far behind. Please hurry up, Jack. We need to get back to the kids. They'll be worried to death by now. Debbie's voice was quivering. He didn't believe her. He was sure she wasn't only worried about her kids. He knew she was terrified of being devoured by the swarm. Who wouldn't be? Those damn children, he thought. If it wasn't for her and her kids, he wouldn't be now outside in the night searching for food. Those little bleeders just couldn't stop eating. It was times like this he wished he was still just by himself. He wished now that when he saw Debbie and her four little leak machines walking past his new home, he hadn't gone all soft and offered them shelter. It's done. Come on, get in the van, Debbie. We're getting the hell out of here now. He took a few deep breaths before he turned the ignition key. The big engine turned over several times before it eventually coughed deeply and spluttered into life. Crap. Just when he thought they were sorted and heading home, he heard them coming. That damn clicking noise filled the air, even above the loud and heavy thumps of the cold engine. It sent a shiver down his spine. He remembered when he'd first heard that friggin' noise. It was about a year ago, back when they still had television. A mass of over 1,000 asteroids flew in from somewhere in deep space and crashed to the ground all over the world. When they started to cool, they poured out of those interstellar lumps of rock. Billions and billions of beetle-like insects appeared, spreading out. It soon became clear they also had an insatiable appetite for meat, spreading out like a swarm of locusts. No one knew where they came from. Captured specimens were shown off to the watching and waiting nations. They were a pure jet black, the size of a large egg, with a dozen close together spindly legs that caused that clicking noise as they scampered around. The cameras also showed their rows and rows of razor sharp teeth. As soon as they landed and hatched, they attacked in vast numbers. They fed on any and every type of animal they could find. Cattle, sheep, and even cats and dogs. This led man to destroy them before they ate all our food and our furry friends. The problem was the swarm fought back. No matter how many were killed, more and more rose up from beneath the earth and joined in the attacks. Whole platoons of soldiers, armed with flamethrowers, were devoured as the swarm burst through the ground beneath them as they marched. Even tanks and armoured vehicles were targeted. The tiny beasts would find the smallest holes and cracks to get in and feed on help inside. Once the so-called mighty armies of the world were defeated, they came to feed in the towns. Now all that was left of the little rural town was Jack, Debbie and her kids. They'd only managed to keep safe at night because they stayed in his old workplace, the High Street Bank. Its high security and airtight steel vault was their bedroom. Hold tight, Debbie. He shoved the van into gear and slammed his foot down the accelerator. Damn clicking surrounded them, so loud it was almost deafening. But the next thing they heard was a crunching and popping as they drove over them. as he drove over that carpet of beasts that were covering the whole road. Debbie kept looking out the windows, looking and seeing that this little slice of the swarm was thankfully flinging out. "Please, Jack," she pleaded, "get me back home to the kids." "Don't worry, doll, ain't planning on doing anything else." He almost laughed to himself at another of her stupid remarks. He spun at full speed onto the deserted and moonlit high street and raced towards the bank. Debbie screamed at the sight before them. The whole bank building was covered in a huge black mass, a swarming and evil mass of the insects. "Oh my God, Jax, the kids won't be inside the vault. They won't be safe. You have to help me. We have to get them out." She grabbed his arms and looked at him through her tear-filled eyes. He looked over the swarm-covered building and then out towards the clear and open road in front of him. "Don't you friggin' dare. Don't even think about driving off," she screamed as she grabbed him by the neck. "You can't leave them. They'll be eaten alive. Please, Jack, save my children." "Why the hell did I get friggin' involved?" Jack sighed deeply and thought over his options. "Sod it. I suppose I am now, so I guess I ain't got a choice." The wheels spun in a cloud of rubberized smoke as he once more slammed down on the accelerator. The van fired off towards the bank.
Hearings. Hearing examinations.
Now here we go with some very eerie examinations. I'm Corey, and I'm really glad that you're listening. This is the first segment that I'm doing here of horror movie reviews for Library of Horror, and I am just thrilled to be here. I thank you for bothering to listen to me at all, and I gotta thank my good friend Dr. Puss for inviting me on the show and hooking me up with a segment. This is just spectacular. So before we get down to business here, I just wanted to, you know, say that I'm kind of feeling some pressure because a lot of Yin's guys don't know me, and you didn't listen to that whole podcast thing that I had going on there a while back, and, you know, you don't know who I am. So I feel like I got to kind of prove myself and establish some cred and say, yeah, look at me. Look at how much I know about horror movies. No, I'm just kidding. I don't think, you know, that I'm anything special when it comes to horror, but I do like horror movies and I like telling you about them. And so, you know, I feel like I should start things off with a bang and something really cool. So that's what I did. The movie that I'm talking about today stars one of the all-time horror icons. I mean, this guy is the person that people think of whenever you say horror movie a lot of times. And of course, that is the late, great Vincent Price. And the movie of his that I'm going to be talking about today is from 1971. And yes, of course, that is the abominable Dr. Fives.
What lovely music for a murder. Or two. Or three. Or nine. Nine killed you. Nine shall die. Are you ready? For Dr. Fives.
Probably the most terrifying motion picture you'll ever see.
Now, first thing that jars me about this movie is that it's in color. I mean, I don't think of Vincent Price in color at all, for whatever reason. I think of him in black and white. And I think that's because I became a Vincent Price fan through his black and white movies, through House on Haunted Hill and Last Man on Earth, movies like that. So in my mind's eye, Vincent Price is actually black and white. But no, he actually does have color, and this movie's in color, so it's kind of weird. But it is kind of cool that this movie does make really, really great use of color, and I'll be talking about that here in a little bit. But it was directed by a guy named Robert Fuest, or something. I don't know if that's even how you pronounce it. But he really didn't do much more else than this, and the sequel, which was Dr. Fives Rises Again, which is also a decent movie. So this is the only thing he did. But I'll tell you what, I'm still jealous of the guy because, you know, who can say that they directed a Vincent Price movie? I wish I could say I directed a Vincent Price movie. But here we go. I'm going to do my best not to spoil this thing for you guys. If you haven't seen it, shame, shame, shame. You really should. You really ought to see this. This is a great movie. What we got here is Dr. Anton Fives. And, well, okay, this takes place in England in the 1930s. Dr. Anton Fives is a guy who supposedly had died in a car crash in the 20s. What happened was his wife was in an accident, so he was there being a good husband, so he was rushing to her side, and he's driving along. And he took a dive off of the side of a cliff or a mountain or something, and it burned up, and supposedly he died. And his wife didn't make it either. She was in the care of this big team of doctors, and they couldn't save her. So that's where we are. So we go back to the 30s, or forward to the 30s, or whatever, and we see a lot of these weird, weird murders start to take place. Like, a guy gets stung to death by bees, and another guy gets torn apart by bats, and another guy is in his car, and a door opens up, and somebody shoves in the freeze machine of death, and it kills him. Another guy gets bitten by rats, and, you know, it's really bizarre what's going on. So the police got to figure this out. They start piecing things together to where they realize that this is Dr. Fives committing these murders, and he has come back. He never died originally. He just kind of went into hiding or whatever for a while. Came back, and he's taking his revenge now on this team of doctors that, in his mind, didn't do their job and didn't save his wife. Because Dr. Fives is obsessed with his wife. So that's kind of consumed him. So he wants to get his revenge. He is modeling all of these deaths around the 10 plagues of Egypt from the Bible. So that's where we got the, you know, bats and rats and frogs and blood and everything. So, all of those plagues are represented in one way or another in his master plan. So that's basically the whole movie right there. And, you may be saying to me, well, Corey, this sounds, you know, pretty much like a crime drama or some kind of mystery or something like that. You know, where's the horror? And I would reply to that by saying, well, there's plenty of horror in here. I mean, let's take a look at the murders, first of all, the killings. I mean, these are crazy, bizarre, gruesome killings. And for 1971, you know, we get a lot of blood and we get some gore, you know, in the scene where the doctor is being torn apart by the rats in his little airplane. We actually see a piece of flesh being ripped off. A guy gets bled to death. There's acid being poured down on it, you know, towards the end. And I'm not going to give away the end. I don't want to do that. But anyhow, it's some pretty crazy deaths. We get the frog mask. I mean, that's one of my favorite ones. This is where they're at this big fancy ball. And of course, we're in jolly old England. And there's one of the doctors there, and he doesn't have a mask. Everybody else has a mask, but he needs a mask. Well, who's there but good old Dr. Fibes? And son of a bitch, he has a mask, and it's this big frog mask. So he says, oh, jolly good, can I borrow your mask, please? And Dr. Fibes hands it over to him, and oh, there we go. And he puts it right on. I think I'm getting a little Australian there, I'm sorry. But Dr. Fibes straps that onto him, and he goes about his business. Well, the mask crushes the guy's head, and which, you know, I'm pretty sure some of the Saw movies actually ripped that idea off. So I wouldn't be surprised. But yeah, so there's a fair amount of blood, even though it looks like Kool-Aid. But who cares? You know, Dawn of the Dead, the blood doesn't look very real in that movie, and it's still awesome. So that's just what they did. That's just what they did. Yeah, so it's definitely a horror movie, and especially from the point of it's Vincent Price. I mean, you put Vincent Price in anything, and automatically it changes to horror right there. He has such presence, he has such character that Vincent Price could take any movie, and just by appearing in that movie, he could make it a horror movie, because that's just the kind of guy he was. And, I mean, it really does help that he plays a really... really gruesome, strange character. Dr. Fibes was really disfigured and really burned up really bad in this car crash. So he's very gruesome looking. He's actually very zombie-like. We get to see a shot of him without all of his masks and makeup on, because most of the movie he goes around wearing a mask and he has little fake body parts and a wig and these long, crazy robes and everything. But yeah, he's pretty hideous. And so there's Vincent Price throughout this whole movie. The movie's in color, so that's kind of freaking me out. And then, they have Vincent made up so that he looks very pasty and very fake. And they did that on purpose, because that's exactly what it is. It's made to look like he has a mask on and everything, and they do that so well. Another freaky thing that's actually really cool about Dr. Fibes is the way that he talks, or doesn't talk, or whatever. The whole movie, Vincent Price does not move his lips one time. He talks, well, in the accident, something was screwed up with his windpipe, so he couldn't talk anymore after the accident. So there he is, being the brilliant doctor. He rigs up a jack that he puts into his windpipe where he can connect a cord into a gramophone. And for all you boys and girls out there who have no idea what a gramophone is, allow me to illustrate the gramophone for you if you haven't seen this movie. Gramophone's like a big horn. It's like the kind of thing that you'd see cheerleaders shouting into at your football games or whatever. And it's hooked up, usually, to a record player. And I know that's an ancient device also, but back in the day, even before record players had the ability to be hooked up to an amp or to speakers or something, you had to use a gramophone, a big old horn coming out so that you could hear the sound. So Dr. Fibes has a cord running to a gramophone on a little cart, and he can wheel it around, and that's how he talks. And it's awesome. I need one of those for my windpipe, because I'm a lazy bastard. But no, it's really, really cool, but it's freaky too, and it's so weird. So, and it's kind of comical too. And another thing this movie does, I think, really well is that it adds a little bit of humor into there, and not only with this whole voice thing, but also with the cops. Now, we have some detectives that are trying to figure out, you know, put the murders together and who's doing them and whatever, and they're kind of bumbling, but they add in a lot of little British subtleties and some humorous things that actually work out really well in this movie. If you were to tell me before I saw this that, hey, this is a really, you know, crazy Vincent Price horror movie, and it's got a little bit of British humor, you know, thrown into there, I would have thought it was kind of stupid. But watching this, it works perfectly, and I don't know why, but it really does. And that's what I think, you know, is my main difference when I think of, you know, Hammer horror, because this movie reminds me so much of Hammer horror. And actually, I like to say that this is probably the best Hammer horror film that is not a Hammer horror film, because that's the look of the movie. And that's kind of the feeling that you get, because it's like the right time period, and it's got the extravagant set pieces and the lighting and things like that that are normally characteristic of Hammer horror films. But Hammer horror never really had a lot of humor in it at all. It was all pretty damn serious. And so this movie has it in, so that's a big difference. You know, Hammer wouldn't have done that. But this really, really is a great movie. I think any horror fan should see it, and I think you'll appreciate it. It's a lot of fun. Of course, it's Vincent Price. He delivers another outstanding performance on this with a really unique character. The set, the lighting and everything, the way that this has been blocked and staged and shot, I think is really, really great. So the movies I review, I'm not going to give any kind of gimmicky little, you know, fancy scale of rating. I'm just going to give you what I would give them from 1 to 10, and you go make your judgment from there. But I like Dr. Fibes, the abominable Dr. Fibes, so much that I'm going to give it an 8 out of 10. I definitely think that you should buy it. Unfortunately, see, here's a stupid thing. Netflix does not offer this either by DVD or by instant watch. If you type it in, you can save it for whenever it does decide to be acquired by Netflix. But otherwise, I think you're going to have to buy it. And if you're lucky, you can find the edition that includes both this and the sequel, Dr. Fibes Rises Again. So if you can get your hands on it, definitely watch this. It's a great movie. Thanks for listening. I'll talk to you guys next time.
Death to all.
Yeah.
A one man has sailed
like to begin by telling me why you feel the need to kill?
Need? You make it sound as if I have no choice in the matter.
Do you?
Oh, yes. They are all my choices.
Then why do you choose to kill people?
Is that the best you can do, Doctor?
I just want to understand...
Why? Do you think I kill because of some deep-down primal urge to rip, tear, and rend?
No,
Maybe I was interfered with by my family when I was a child.
Please, it's just that...
Maybe I have a tumor on my brain. I could be part of a cult. Ever consider that?
To be honest with you, due to the extent of your crimes, I think I have considered everything.
Really?
Yes, I've done background checks on you, of course.
Ah, but they can only show what is written on paper.
Meaning?
Well, you can only go by whatever has been written down, by what has been catalogued. How do you know I wasn't taken under the wing of another killer, nurtured and trained, as it were?
Were you?
No.
Then tell me, why do you do it?
Do you really want to know?
Yes.
Very well. I do it because I can.
That's not an answer.
Oh, it is. I do it because I'm very good at it. I do not leave mistakes behind. No evidence. I'm smarter than all of them.
I see.
You do not see. You see nothing at all. What, do you think I'm a narcissistic personality now?
Well, you do seem to exhibit...
No! I'm stating a truth. I'm smarter than all of them. You read the files. You know that they're just chasing their tails down at the station.
Yes. You are very smart.
Thank you.
Will you tell me why you do it? I admit, I have no clue whatsoever.
Oh, really, Doctor? I cannot possibly tell you.
Why?
It's against the rules. You know that.
What rules?
The rules that were set up in the beginning.
I'm afraid I don't understand you.
Of course you don't. Like I said, I'm smarter than all of you.
Do you have any plans?
Yes.
Would you like to talk about them?
To you?
Yes.
Why?
I'm curious.
Curiosity killed the cat. Satisfaction brought it back. But I believe it was never the same cat again. You really want to know my plans?
Yes.
Did you notice we have the same color eyes?
I never noticed.
If I tell you my plans, you might not like them.
Try me.
Very well. I plan to find and slaughter 3 families in the next 2 weeks.
And how do you propose to do that?
Why, by gathering personal information on them, of course.
What kind of information?
Well, if they're married, have any pets, children, security, that kind of thing.
And do you believe you can do that? Get that kind of information?
Oh, yes. People tend to tell me everything.
And you will kill these families?
Every last one.
How do you choose them?
Oh, they choose me.
Dr. Martin, your 2 o'clock patient is here. Thank you, Helen. Dr. Martin stared grimly in the mirror as his reflection grinned back at him and winked.